You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the bonds shared between people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. This week on the Shared Security Podcast, episode 307, we're going to debunk all of the information about that new iOS 17 name drop feature that you keep hearing about in the news.
It was so scary, right? So, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So scary. And then for our Aware Much segment with Scott, we're going to be going back to QR codes and, dare I say, quishing.
Quishing, yes. the lines are lighting up.
That's right. That's right. Don't say that word. And Scott's going to talk about a rather significant attack using a QR code. And then we're going to finish up with a story about a ransomware attack, which has forced a multi-state hospital chain here in the U.S. to divert emergency room patients somewhere else. And joining me this week is Mr. Scott Wright.
Hey, folks.
Welcome.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be back.
Yes. Yeah. No Kevin this week. Yeah. So it's just you and me, Scott.
So we get down to business and no funny business.
Yeah. Straight into it.
Yeah.
So let's start right away with this iOS 17 name drop feature. So I guess I want to preface this with just saying that it's really interesting to me how misperceptions or maybe misinformation spread so quickly about something that I think Apple has, I think, really a lot of good intentions for. And this is actually something that affected me because I am one of those people that have two phones. So I have a work phone and I have my personal phone. I like to keep those two things separated. But I noticed when I updated to iOS 17, when I put both of those phones in my pocket, I noticed the name drop feature show up. I'm like, do you want to transfer your contact information to this other phone? And it kept popping up over and over. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is annoying as heck. So I ended up disabling that feature mainly so I don't get bothered by my work phone and my personal phones being very close proximity, like literally touching each other.
Oh, hey, did you know that this phone is nearby?
Yeah. Yes,
I did
know. Pockets. Right. Yeah, no kidding. And so one of the things that's been out there is there's been some police departments and law enforcement that are on Facebook spreading information saying that you need to disable this feature because this is going to allow anybody in the world that has an iPhone to get your contact information without your knowledge. And this is not true.
Not true. Not true.
At all.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that have to happen for that transfer of contact information. So both phones have to be unlocked. The phones have to be literally touching, so extremely close together. Both users are going to receive a prompt. So this is very similar to AirDrop, right? Mm-hmm. When you transfer a file or something that way.
Yeah.
Only new contacts can be transferred for the first time. There's no updating of your existing contacts. And you can pull your phone away at any time, basically by pressing the power button, which will stop the process. So there's a lot of kind of safeguards put in place here. And this is kind of overblown from that perspective.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting story because I remember reading about it a week or two ago and then, you know, all the buzz about, oh, this is bad. But honestly, I found it really hard to believe that Apple would enable a service that would be so easy to exploit, right? I mean, just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. And so this is another lesson to just be very cautious about what you read on social media. Now, unfortunately, these things coming out from law enforcement and these are, you know, organizations that
should be trustworthy.
Trust.
Yeah.
That's a little scary.
Yeah. And not to say that there can't be vulnerabilities. I mean, anytime it's sort of my mantra is if it's a new feature for convenience, there could be new vulnerabilities, right? So, you know, from my point of view, there could always be bugs, you know, in a feature like this. And you have to balance that risk perspective, right, against, you know, the convenience.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Scott. Well, are you ready for our favorite segment of the week, which is Aware Much?
Yes, we do Aware Much here.
Yes, we do.
It's time for that segment that helps people with tips for protecting their personal and business data and systems. Brought to you by ClickArmor, the first fully interactive security awareness training platform for employee training, engagement, and assessment. So it's too bad that Kevin isn't here today. I wanted to let people know he was very gracious in admitting that QR code attacks are more than just phishing, because he did say that at one time, that, oh, it's just another phishing attack. But when I pointed this one out to him a few days ago, he said, yeah, I guess you're right, you know. So anyway, that's the best we're going to get from Kevin. So no, I appreciate that. But in this story that we're covering today, there was a 71-year-old woman in Thornaby, England, who lost 13,000 pounds during a QR code scam. You know, it's really interesting to look at this from the point of view of how it was done. And I've imagined this happening for years now, when I first learned about QR codes, that somebody could just come along and paste a QR code sticker over the sticker that's on something like a parking kiosk. And that's exactly what happened. So when this woman used that QR code, apparently she was directed to a fake website where she entered payment information, maybe other information. And the attackers literally used that to, you know, apply for loans and do fraudulent transactions, I think to a total of 13,000 pounds. I think the point here is that QR codes really make for an easy way to trick people in the physical world. I mean, when you're out there and you see something, you say, oh, I can just use the QR code to do this. It may not be the best idea, depending on, you know, your risk profile. So it's not really just phishing. You do need to be careful about using QR codes to register for things like parking apps and other things like that. So what do you think, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it brings up a situation that I had when I was traveling a couple months ago. I was looking to park my car in one of those parking lots where you had to pay via a QR code. And it was like really cheesy. Like it was a piece of paper that looked like somebody literally printed out on an inkjet printer. And it was actually connected to, I said, to somebody's Venmo. And I'm like, really? Oh wow. My gosh. I told my wife, I'm like, should I scan this thing? Like, I have no idea, but it is so easy to fall for something like this.
Yeah.
And you've got to be on the lookout.
Yeah. So I don't know if you can see it. I'm just sharing the BBC article, the Thornaby car park and how this.
Yeah.
It just, you know, you walk up to a rail station stop or even a bus stop maybe, and there could be these QR codes, you know, a sign like this that has the mobile app, looks very official, and it's probably all the right sign, but all they need to do is put a sticker over the QR code that's there and you could be, what would you call it, lured away, right? So anyway, that's really interesting. I think some of the things that we also want to let people know is that QR codes can be good when you're expecting them, right? So when you do things like setting up MFA, you're expected to get a message with a QR code that you scan and you know it's coming from someplace reliable because you actually asked for it in that case. So just something that I wanted to let people know. These are things that we really do kind of tend to rely on, but we should be a little more careful with.
I say one of the things is, and maybe you're going to talk about this, is a lot of these, the legitimate signs like that actually have URLs that you can go to, or they say download this app to pay for your parking or what have you. And I would just recommend if you're kind of suspicious of a QR code, or maybe it looks like a sticker on top of the sign, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to that URL instead, or look up the app in the app store manually. It might be a better approach.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there was an approach that I thought might work well if you're a vendor, you know, deploying these things, you know, rather than putting out a QR code, maybe you just use the domain with a slash and some kind of a shortcut code, like an alphanumeric for the parking lot or for whatever it is, because people should be able to recognize a simple domain for one of these apps. And, you know, if you just had an alphanumeric for the lot, then it would direct you right to the, you know, the information about configuring it. But if you don't have the app, maybe it redirects you to download the app. So there's no need for it to be so obscured with, you know, the QR code graphic that kind of mesmerizes people and said, oh, I must use my phone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Cool. So I wanted to also just mention that this segment is brought to you by ClickArmor, that is the first fully interactive security awareness training and engagement platform. And if you don't mind, Tom, I'm just going to share my screen for a moment and show people what this looks like, because I've never really, well, I might have done it maybe a year ago. To show people, you know, the ClickArmor platform looks a little bit like a learning management system, but it's a very different look and feel. And that's one of the things that I've learned over the last 15 years teaching security awareness. You know, you kind of have to do things differently and take people on a little bit of a trip and let them be interactive and experiment with things. So we've got phishing, we've got social engineering scenarios, we've got word searches, and of course the management of users through single sign-on and notifications, automation, things like that. So this segment was brought to you by ClickArmor. Love to chat with you more about it if you have a need for trying to engage people more directly and get them through training, get them to focus more, get them to be less vulnerable. And along the same motivation, the whole idea of trying to change the security awareness industry, we've created this community now called the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum, where we do biweekly sessions. You've probably heard us talk about those in past episodes, but everyone is welcome. You can go to clickarmor.ca and you can learn more about the ClickArmor product there, but you'll also have a little pop-up. You can join the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum where we have our live sessions. And we also have the new community site where all the recordings are posted and people can do discussions around getting resources for security awareness managers. So as we've said before, don't let your security awareness manager suffer in silence, right? So that's it for this episode of Aware Much.
All right. Well, our last story, we're talking about a ransomware attack that has prompted a very large healthcare provider here in the U.S., Ardent Health Services. They operate about 30 hospitals in 6 states. Well, they had to divert some patients from some of its emergency rooms to other hospitals because of this ransomware attack. And this is actually one of the first large incidents that I've heard of where, critical functions within a hospital, or I mean, we're talking about the emergency room, was affected by a ransomware attack. I think we covered a couple of years ago about someone that had died because of I don't think it was a ransomware attack, but it was some type of cyber attack.
I think this is really interesting. I mean, it is, in my mind, it kind of reminds me of you ever watch Whose Line Is It Anyway? You know, the improv show, you know.
Love that show.
They have the scenes from a hat and you say, you know, things you don't want to hear when you're about to go under the operating room knife. You know, he says, well, we just got a ransomware attack on our system. Oops. Yeah, I mean, it could be very, you know, dangerous for sure physically for people. And it, you know, just reminds us that these systems have to be separated, right? They've got to be on an operational technology network separate from the internet so that they can't be exposed to this kind of attack.
I know there was another story in the news this week about some water treatment plants, a water treatment plant here in the U.S. being hit by Iranian hackers.
Yeah.
Again, you know, this is the critical infrastructure and how we protect that is going to become more paramount, I think, especially with these geopolitical hacktivism types of things going on of like, oh, we're unhappy about this one country that's starting a war with another country, so let's attack all of their critical infrastructure, their hospitals, and so on. And so I think there's going to be a more emphasis on securing this type of technology next year for sure.
Yeah. Are you making a prediction, Tom? Is that what we're doing today?
I'm starting to, yeah. And maybe I will carry that over into our next conversation, where we do have our annual prediction show, where we actually look back at the previous year, at this year, and we say, oh, what did we predict? What came true? What didn't come true? Have a little bit of fun with that. And then we give our opinions on 2020.
I don't remember what I predicted for this year, so it'll be interesting.
I don't either, but I'm going to give that episode a listen and maybe have a little bit of a laugh. I think we all predicted AI was going to take everything over.
Yeah.
And not quite. Not quite.
Well, it's certainly taken over a lot of conversations, but
yes, it has. Yeah. All that drama with the board of directors with OpenAI was the peak news cycle, I think, for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, good stories today. And I'm looking forward to having Kevin back for the next time.
That's right.
Will that be our year end of episode, the next one?
The next one, we actually have another special guest we're having on the show. I'm not going to reveal who that is, but it will be a very fun and entertaining episode. So definitely stay tuned for that one. And if you haven't checked out our last interview, that was with the one and only Tanya Janka, And that's definitely an episode, especially if you're in application security or want to learn more about application security, that is an episode to check out.
Yeah, so she had some interesting predictions as well. So
definitely. And I will plug our Patreon. If you want to support the podcast, we do have some bonus episodes that you can check out. The one with Tanya, we have Jason Streets, we've got Tiberius, and I will be adding more bonus episodes here in the future. So you can go to sharedsecurity.net/supporter, and that will take you to our Patreon page where you can gain access to those bonus episodes.
Very nice.
So with that, Scott, I think that's all we have time for today. But thank you as always.
Quick episode.
Yeah, I love it. Short and sweet. Right to the point.
Yep.
We'll have Kevin back next week to give us his always entertaining
to stretch things out and yeah.
opinions on things.
Nice.
So until then, we will talk to you all again next week, and stay safe and stay private. Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.